Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. On this day after the election, our guest is soon-to-be former Assemblymember Bill Evans. Back in October, when Bill said he would not run for another term, I was curious. Did he consider his time on the Assembly sort of a civic duty? One term was enough to fill that requirement? As opposed to, say, a career politician who might view an Assembly tenure as a step toward another political ambition. I was curious about that. And also, we live in divisive times. As a community, a state, and a nation, issues, voters, and leaders often seem polarized. Does this climate deter average citizens from deciding to step up and do a good civic deed to the best of their ability? Can leaders still find common ground to solve problems? So Bill was willing, and I called it an exit interview because I was thinking of it as the exit from a job. The Assembly, being on the Assembly is a job. And so I just want to welcome you to Hometown Alaska, and thank you for taking the time out to be here.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks, Kellen.
You've been very civil all the way along. Willing. I think you said, after I had you booked, I began to think about the term limiting Assembly members and thought, ooh, they also have thoughts about what it's like to serve. So I did call LV Gray Jackson, Patrick Flynn, and Bill Starr to say, hey, you too have a lot of experience on the Assembly. Maybe you'd like to join us by phone. So we may hear from LV and we may hear from Patrick. Both said they'd like to talk a little bit about what it was like to serve on the Assembly. And, for me, that's the reason why. What does it take? What's it like? How much do you get paid if you get paid? What does it do to your balancing your family life, your work life, and all of that? Mostly because I think we might be in a time of political reengagement and a broader political engagement than we might have had. Maybe, maybe not. But people might be thinking who hadn't been thinking about doing this before. So I also want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. Bill's been the name behind a number of things that the Assembly have dealt with, so you might have questions about that or comments or, just queries about what is it like to serve on the Assembly? How do you balance everything? So give us a call if you'd like anytime during the hour at 550-8433 in Anchorage. And I don't think statewide calls are going to come in for you, so I won't give a statement.
It could be national. I don't know. Very, very popular.
Yeah, okay. And then we can take emails at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We'll watch for LV and Patrick to call in anytime. They won't be on the whole hour, I don't think, but just a little bit. But let's start a little bit with your bio, just so, it's been on the website for 3 years. People might know a lot about you, but just FYI, you came from Cleveland, Ohio. I worked with somebody from Cleveland, so they really love that city. So
do I. It's a great place.
And you left.
I know. It was quite difficult, but I still have family there and get back quite
often. And you
often.
Get back. Yep. And you were paratrooper. Where did you serve as a paratrooper?
At Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I was
never deployed overseas.
No, it was during peacetime, and it was just out of high school, and I was just a regular enlisted guy.
So you had some practice about jumping in and just doing things, right? So that was good training for the Assembly, maybe.
Exactly.
So you were briefly a police officer while you were going to school, and you graduated from Cleveland State University, went on and got your bachelor's degree in history and political science. There's another little clue that you might end up in politics someday, and a law school degree from the University of Michigan. So what brought you quickly here? I know it was a job, but were you looking for a different place to live?
Yeah, I think both my wife and I were looking for someplace different, and right out of law school, I applied to a bunch of sort of different places everywhere from Virgin Islands through Alaska and Hawaii, and came up with an opportunity not long after I graduated. It was about 6 years that was available here in Alaska, and we just took a chance, kind of came up sight unseen and haven't left.
Mm-hmm. And you landed in Anchorage and stayed in Anchorage.
Exactly.
Okay. So then let's go to when you decided to run for office. I know you told me when I did meet you for coffee to convince you to come on the show, and you said that you'd been really active in the chamber, right? So it's not as if you had no political activism or community activism going on. So.
Yeah, I've always had positions with the chamber. I was on their board for 13 years, was the chair a couple times. I served on the employee relations board for the municipality, the transportation commission, things like that that were volunteer positions. I was on the state mental health board. So I've been involved in a number of different not political, but quasi-governmental entities. So,
and was that because you thought someday I'm going to run for office and I want to get the background, or I just feel like I'm a citizen, it's something I should do?
I always had the idea that I might run for office sometime, so that was certainly a thought in my head. But those things are interesting too, and it's nice to be able to serve. They're opportunities, and people should take advantage of them.
Mm-hmm. By the way, your background is labor law, and so that you would have some expertise to come in and be a part of a study of what the city's doing.
Sometimes I can help.
But when the decision came to run, was it that people called you and said, "Hey, Bill, now's the time," or you thought, what was going on in your mind?
Oh, it's a sad story. No one came to me and asked me to run. I wasn't sought out in any way.
You weren't the most popular kid in the class.
No, but I was actually the truth of the matter is I'd always thought about running. I thought I could do well at it. And I was reading a biography on Winston Churchill one day and came out of my office at my law firm and just told everybody I was going to run and went forward from there.
Literally from reading that book, you kind of...
Yeah, it was fascinated by the public life that Churchill led and all the things he was involved with. And I just started thinking, I'm wasting my time not running, just thinking about it all the time. I was,
getting up there. Did you admire him or was it just reading about his... involvement?
More reading about his involvement. I mean, it wasn't specifically him that motivated me.
It's not your hero.
But being a public, being a somebody involved in public discussions and public events, it was attractive.
Right. Okay. Now we have three new people coming on the assembly. Do I have that right?
Oh, at least four. And it depends if you count Fred Dyson as a new person or not.
Right, yeah. Right. So Chris Constant, Fred Dyson, Felix Rivera, and Suzanne LeFranc.
Right.
So, I want to take you back to when you were the newbie.
Yeah, not and, that long ago.
Yeah, no. 3 years goes by pretty fast. What's the transition like? Do you take somebody under your wing for a little while and help them, or is that left to the city to do? What's this transition like?
It's a very informal and haphazard process. The new people will get sworn in on the 18th and will pretty much be thrown to the wolves. The clerk's office generated a little bit of an orientation. Pete Peterson and I got on the same time. We were the two new guys. And they did a few basic things, but for the most part, it's just kind of learn as you go, but no real formal orientation or process.
Things to read? They throw a lot of things at you to read.
Pretty quick, yeah. Once you get to your first meeting, they'll just hand you this big notebook, and which is kind of hard to figure out how it's organized at first, but you get the hang of it after a couple meetings.
Lots of reading. Mm-hmm. Did you come on thinking, there's a couple things from watching Anchorage, there's a couple things I want to do or a couple things I'm interested in. Did you come in with an agenda or did you come in to serve?
No, I came in more to serve without any real specific agenda. And frankly, I didn't have the best knowledge about the specifics of what was going on in Anchorage. And I think that's true of a lot of people that run for the assembly. We have sort of broad ideas of what the municipality does or doesn't do well, and have just very generalized ideas about, how to fix that. But it is a very complicated and very specific organism when you start to understand it. And I think it's very difficult for somebody who's not on the assembly to really understand the issues.
Yeah. I kind of heard this similar discussion going on with school board candidates in the vein of a question that was being posed, and we saw that it was posed around the country to school board people, which was, once you're on the school board, do you think you serve the constituents or do you think you serve the school district? And I kind of want to ask you that question. I'm sure you feel you serve your constituents because you have constituents, but the more you learn, do you end up feeling like, wow, I see why the city did it that way, or I see why it's complicated? Where do you end up? Do you end up kind of being in the middle there?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally I always viewed the position as serving Anchorage as a whole. I mean, I always kept in mind my particular constituents in South Anchorage.
District 6,
yeah. Uh-huh. And it had to be mindful of, what was in their best interest. But most of the job is really making decisions about things that benefit all of Anchorage or to the detriment of all of Anchorage. So there weren't too many issues that were district specific.
Mm-hmm. So, but back to that question, do you feel like you sort of over time come to understand why the city does what it does. The city, it sounds like it's some, you know, entity that we could point to, but it's a lot of people, it's a lot of services, it's a lot of responsibilities for a community. So do you feel like you edged toward sort of understanding why things are the way they are sometimes?
Yeah, I think very much. I think the whole process is just an enormous learning process. And what I didn't know then and do know now is a world of difference. And I do understand why a lot of things are the way they are, and that politicians really have sometimes very limited abilities to change those things. The municipality is a pretty large vessel that you can put a new captain at the wheel, but the amount that you can change things is pretty limited.
Right, right. I see that we have Patrick Flynn joining us. Hi, Patrick.
Good afternoon, Kathleen. How are you?
Very good, and thanks for calling in. I kind of set up the show thinking about Bill only serving one term, and that was curious, but then I realized other assembly members were terming off, and they have a lot of experience, too. So I really appreciate that you agreed to kind of call in and reflect a little bit on, you know, what it is to serve. Partly I'm thinking about we may be in a period of more engagement, maybe broader engagement, and more people might be thinking about this. So I'm just kind of interested in you and Bill talking a little bit about being prepared for something like this. Bill and I were just talking about how it kind of emerges slowly, what the task is. How was it for you? You've served three terms, right?
For good or for ill, yes. Yes, three terms.
For good or for ill. Do you have any regrets?
Well, sure. I mean,
do you want to name one or just?
Well, Bill knows some of them, but and actually, I tuned in a little bit a few minutes ago and heard him discussing his introduction, and it kind of hurt because Bill, you remember me coming to your office and telling you about the nasty surprise we were going to spring on you, where you had to set the mill levy in your first meeting.
You had to do what? What was that?
Yeah, the first meeting for all the new assembly members is actually the first quarter budget revisions.
Oh.
And it's a very complicated and very important meeting. And
yeah. Yeah,
and Patrick's right. I did forget, but he did come to warn me and kind of give me a heads up on what to expect.
So looking out for you.
He was.
Yeah, which was nicer than what I did to Amy, where she showed up for her first meeting. And I said, hey, Amy, you ready to raise taxes?
Yeah. That's scary. Yeah. I have difficulty paying my taxes, and figuring everybody else's taxes out would be too much for me.
You know, there's a ton of things, as Bill mentioned, to learn. And, you know, I would be lying if I told you I knew everything, even after 9 years of service. I admire Bill for having the courage to say he wasn't going to run. I tried not to run 3 years ago, and but I made the mistake of trying to find somebody to replace me, and nobody would do it.
And then you felt compelled to run again.
And whereas he just said, I'm not doing it.
Bill, you said, I know when we met, you said, there's 60,000 people in my district. There's got to be one person there that can step up.
Yeah, but he proved himself once again to be smarter than I am.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Are you going to run for something else? Are you going to take a break and spend time with your family? What's it going to be like for you?
Oh, I'm absolutely taking a break. I don't know if you saw my interview with Brendan Joel Kelly in the Anchorage Press, but my sons are the age where they actually like spending time with their dad.
It won't last, right?
It's not going to last. I'm going to enjoy it while I can.
Uh-huh.
And I own pieces of five different businesses here in Anchorage, and uh-huh. One of them is a startup that likely is going to demand more of my time.
The famous marijuana shop? Is that it?
exactly that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have administrative skills that my partners would like to tap. And
yeah.
And
go earn a living again, right?
Yeah, just being out of the public eye will be kind of nice, yeah. Actually, to be honest with you. I, as much as I've enjoyed it, I'm ready to be a little more low-key.
Uh-huh. Well, because you and Bill have had this position, I'm going to ask Bill the same question. But, you know, if you were to be giving advice, and maybe you feel like that's pompous to ask, but, you know, what advice would you have for the incoming assembly members?
I guess I would say to be modest in your approach. There is a tendency amongst people who are conferred a certain degree of authority to assume that that authority is, given from on high. It's not. It comes from your neighbors. It comes from your friends. And to be modest in how you use that authority, that opportunity, is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. What's a good mistake you made?
A good mistake I made?
This is like a job interview, right?
You know, I was actually talking with a friend. I made a good mistake when I had a quiet conversation with a member of the previous administration about a particular budgetary item, and I learned that particular administrator didn't support the budget change that was being made by the administration, and managed to reverse it. And then, when of course the amendment was not unexpectedly overridden by the mayor, or rather vetoed by the mayor, managed to get it overridden. So it was just one of those happenstance conversations.
Oh, so you knew it was coming. You sort of knew what.
Oh yeah, I knew exactly what was happening.
Okay.
I never betrayed anyone's confidence. I didn't.
Ah, I see.
I didn't tell anybody what I knew. I just suggested to some of my colleagues that they might want to talk to somebody and get a little more information. And
do you know what he's talking about, Bill? Do you know exactly what he's talking about?
No, I never understand what Patrick's talking about.
Okay. That actually precedes Bill's tenure on the assembly.
Oh, okay. So he wouldn't.
He was not responsible for that one.
Okay. All right. Let's see. How about any advice for Mayor Berkowitz?
I wouldn't presume to advise the executive branch. I actually, as a member of the legislative branch, have gone out of my way to avoid telling the executive branch how to run its operations.
Kind of a conflict. It's kind of not your bailiwick. You're not. That's not what that assembly is supposed to do.
Well, I believe in the separation of powers. I believe we have our role. I believe they have theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Bill can perhaps, I'll sign off here in a couple minutes.
Sure.
This is a Bill show, not mine. Bill can tell you a little bit about how I sort of inserted myself into the discussion of the municipality's acquisition of ConocoPhillips Beluga River unit assets, the natural gas field, just because I happen to have that level of expertise. I inserted myself into the port project debacle because I had a level of expertise. But it's not where you get to tell the executive branch how to do things. It's more bringing to light the facts that force them to confront the reality that they might have missed just because they're too deep in the weeds and not looking up at the horizon.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you one more question, and then we'll let you go. And unless you have anything you want to ask Bill on the air for public consumption,
we sit next to each other, so I get to ask him anything I want anytime I need to.
Okay, for at least one or two more meetings, huh? So my last question is, if you don't have anything for Bill, is just to say, how about for citizens in Anchorage? The state's in some turmoil financially. The city is likely to feel that. Would you say to people, buckle up for a rough ride, but it'll be okay? Or, I don't know, given your perspective on the assembly and, your knowledge of the state and the city, are we going to be okay?
Yes, we're going to be fine. I actually have this same presentation that Bill received several months ago. I lived through the recession in the 80s as a kid. And there is a nifty graph that the assessor's office can show you And the housing bubble from 1983, the new construction units were, I think, like 4,300 that year alone.
Mm-hmm.
In the last, that we haven't equaled that in the last decade. I mean, cumulatively.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be easy working through this economic upheaval, but the structural deficiencies that we faced then are not in place now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, don't get me wrong, I don't envy the folks who are going to have to deal with the continuing, I guess we'll call it waterfall of activity, where the state cuts this and the municipality has to cut that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be difficult, but it's not a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just the challenge of working through a business problem.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it myself as a private sector professional. You know, I'm sure Bill's dealt with it in his business. And you tighten
your belt.
You just manage.
and you eat more macaroni and cheese, right?
Well, my sons love macaroni and
cheese. Yeah, it's not a hardship for them. Well, Patrick, I just want to say thank you for taking a little time. Appreciate it. Because sometimes at the end, we don't take a little bit of time and talk about it. And I don't know, I just appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Well, it's my pleasure. And sorry, Bill, I didn't mean to steal your thunder. I mean, it's your show, right?
Just typical.
We still have time to get Bill in the hot seat here. So
yeah, harass him mercilessly.
All right.
He only did one term, so he needs more torture.
That's true. He recognized it for what it was and got out, right? All right, Patrick, thanks so much. Appreciate
it.
All right, so let's see. We asked him a couple things, and I said I was going to ask you. Let me just say for folks, if you're wondering, who are those voices on the radio? This is Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We have Bill Evans in the studio with me, and we just were joined by Patrick Flynn on the phone just to talk a little bit about what it's like to serve on the Assembly. We're going through a transition. We've got four new members coming on, and Bill Evans chose not to rerun, which I thought was interesting. It made me think about a citizen stepping up to do a job. You know, I'm a citizen and I live in this town. I should step up and do something. And I just wanted to know why Bill was doing it. So he agreed to come on, and that opened the door to just talk a little bit about what service on the Assembly is like. I'm going to put our numbers out here one more time, and then Bill and I will get back to talking. In Anchorage, it's 550-8433, or you can also send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Bill, back to you. What was your best mistake on the Assembly?
I would presume that I made mistakes. I don't know. It's probably hard to tell what the best mistake was. You're kind of shooting in the dark a lot of times. Probably being naive enough when I proposed the sort of the equal rights ordinance. Back.
It passed.
It had to be, you know, I worked with Patrick on a revision after my initial one.
And there were a lot of amendments. I remember going back and reading that 14 amendments proposed.
Yeah.
Not all of them went, but a few went. Yeah.
But, you know, I originally proposed an ordinance that was supposed to be sort of a kumbaya moment, bringing, you know, both sides together in some kind of grand bargain. And I thought I could somehow appease both the right and the left. And I thought I had the magic or somehow to do that, and quickly learned that
Anchorage has struggled with this over time.
Most every place has at one point or another as they came to deal with it. But I learned from that. It still worked out well. You know, it's one of my proudest accomplishments on the Assembly. But it took a toll in the beginning, where both sides, instead of joining in and saying what a great guy I am, we're mad at me. It's like, you're terrible, and you're just out to get us.
Yeah.
So it was a good lesson.
Mm. That's an interesting one. Let's see. What does it take? Do you have to be an intellectual genius, a mathematical genius, a tax genius to serve on the Assembly?
You certainly don't, as evidenced by all of us on the Assembly, who are mostly none of those things. There are surprisingly qualified people on the Assembly in various areas. It depends. Everybody kind of takes it at a different approach to it. I have what I consider sort of a scientific method that I take to what I do on the Assembly, And that works for me.
What would that be?
Well, it's a couple different things. I mean, when I believe that the job on the assembly is mostly problem solving. I think that it's not necessarily a political ideology thing. It's just that, you know, the government has certain problems that it recognizes and some that it doesn't. And in order to address those problems and to solve them, you have to understand them. So you have to study the problems, come up with solutions that you think might work, implement those solutions, but then watch them. So you take a sort of scientific approach
testing.
To government. Yeah, testing and seeing what works and then, you know, backing off and changing your position if it's not working out. Mm-hmm. It's a very reasoned approach, I like to think of it as. But that's certainly not the approach that the majority take. I don't think it's not it's a little more, I think, fly by the seat of your pants kind of thing, because things come at us pretty fast. We have an enormous amount of material to go through every 2 weeks. So it's very difficult to take the time to really study issues at the level and depth that I think is required. But that was the approach I tried to take. Others are better at kind of assimilating a lot of information very fast, kind of spitting out a result that works for them and often works for the city.
Do you think your background as a lawyer was significant to you?
I do. I mean, I think it goes back to that same approach. As a lawyer, you get a case and you have to learn all the facts pretty quickly, learn what applies, what's important, what's not important, and then you know, take a reasoned approach to it. And that's what I tried to do on the assembly. It worked for me because that's how I think. Everybody brings, I believe that Eric Croft has a degree in science of some type. So, he might take a different view on it. And, Elvie's been on the working for the municipality in various capacities. So she draws on her experience, greater experience in municipality. So each brings something to the table that I think shapes the way we look at the issues on the assembly.
Well, what figured into your decision not to run again? I mean, you probably could have. You're an incumbent. Incumbents have a lot of name recognition.
Oh, yeah. I think it's important. I think it's as important not to run as it is to run in some ways. I mean, my view of politics is, like you were saying before, I kind of believe in that citizen legislature kind of approach where people aren't career politicians. You come in, you do a job, and then you move along and you don't build up necessarily your own political capital. I see a lot of politicians, not necessarily the people I was working with, but politicians in general that, and we all see them, that they're just obviously so,
it is
have a death grip on their position that they don't want to lose it, that they sometimes compromise, their positions or operate in a manner that, is safe or keeps them elected. And I just think, for me, it works out. I can just kind of do it for a while and walk away, and it doesn't matter. And I want to encourage that approach to the job.
What would you say is, if somebody was sort of talking to you and saying, "Bill, I think I want to do this," what's the most important quality I have? Is it the time? Is it the analytic skills? Is it patience? Is it commitment? I mean, what is it that you think is an essential quality?
If there's one essential quality, I would say it's work.
Work ethic.
Yeah, I think that would serve you the best no matter what else you bring to the table. It's a pretty high volume of stuff that we have to wade through. The average binder that we get every 2 weeks is 6 inches thick, and it's full of
homework.
Yeah, very tedious homework. And that's just part of the job. I mean, that's only a small, very visible part of it. So if you have a good work ethic, if you go into it knowing that I'm going to put my best effort into this and try as hard as I can, you're going to do well.
You'll figure it out.
Yeah, the issues we deal with, the city is very very complex organism, like I've mentioned, but the issues are understandable. If you take the time to read the materials, talk to the people involved, people will get it. You don't have to be any kind of genius to do this. And if you put the work effort into it, and then if you treat people respectfully, you'll do a lot better.
And when you say people, do you mean citizens or do you mean employees of the city who are trying to explain things to you, or you're maybe challenging things that the city's doing? Is that, I guess you probably mean all of that.
I do. I mean all of it. I mean, obviously, you have to treat your constituents with respect. That's helpful.
But also
your colleagues on the assembly who have different views and belong to different teams than you do. Mm-hmm. Understanding that you're all trying to do the same thing ultimately is what's best for Anchorage. And then, like you pointed out, I think understanding that there are a lot of really talented, great people that work in the city and that have been there longer than you have and that may know something more than you do, and having an appreciation for that knowledge and that experience and that dedication mm-hmm. that they have, and learning from them as opposed to kind of saying, you know, thinking that you're the know-it-all now, that you've, mm-hmm. you're an assembly member and, mm-hmm. and you're going to fix this. Just in keeping your ears open to and your mind open to what mm-hmm. you can learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to take a little break here. So maybe in the second half, we may hear from Elvie, but we also may talk a little bit more about this election, remind people what we know so far. Some things are still sorting themselves out. But join us again, and we're going to take just a little break right here. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today is the day after the election, and I wanted to talk to Bill Evans because he did not run again, and I wanted to understand why someone would do that, because we don't see that very often. People seem to have political careers, and so, you know, I just kind of, that's kind of the basis of the program, and we ended up inviting Elvie and Patrick to join in if they can by phone to just talk a little bit, because both of them had three terms on the assembly and have termed out and obviously have, you know, 9 years of experience. You've got 3 years of experience. But I think you and Patrick kind of agreed in the idea that humility is a good first step, even though you've been elected. Learning the ropes is an important part of it. Let's see. So I'm going to throw out our numbers in case any of our listeners have questions for Bill or thoughts about the assembly and how it works, how it coordinates with the city. We're at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Bill. So I was thinking about, where does philosophy, I mean, you're a nonpartisan when you run for the assembly. However, we do have a mix of political representations on it, and we don't really talk about, how do you deal with that on the assembly? Do people assume that, oh, you're from the conservative part of town, so you're going to be a fiscal conservative, or you're going to be a social conservative, or you're going to be this, or you're going to be that? How does that emerge in conversations with your assembly members, and how much of a part does it play?
Tends to play a bigger part nowadays, I think. I think we run for assembly seats with in a very partisan way. Whether we attach, you know, party labels to ourselves or not, there's conservative candidates and liberal candidates, and everybody knows who they are. And the
balance on the assembly.
Exactly. There are people talk about a balance and things, but you know, I think the reality is that it does, I think, a disservice to municipal government to do that. I think it was brilliant to have municipal government be nonpartisan, because the real job on the assembly, as I see it at least, is to serve sort of as a board of directors. The municipality kind of runs itself, but you need to have some people up there making some big policy decisions. They're not usually ideological. I mean, I just looked at this last election in the campaigns about, you know, it's spending our tax dollars or it's not spending our tax dollars, and that's always the big debate. But the reality is we have a $500 million-plus operating budget for the municipality, not counting the school district, and probably the debates we have over money, the strong ideological debates, probably involve $10 million of that. Mm. So it's a very small percentage.
That you can actually touch.
Yeah. And then it's, you know, I think that partisan politics tends to be, at least at the municipal level, sort of a shorthand for superficiality. I think it's much better to come at it just like I said. I think of it as problem solving, and I just want to come at the issues and try to understand them and figure out what's the best way to fix them. And I think if you define that by saying, "Well, I'm conservative, so therefore I'm against spending," or I'm liberal and therefore I'm supporting these social programs, I think it's just wrong. I think you have to take each one of them on their own merits. There's some spending that I supported and some I didn't. And I think you just have to be more nonpartisan in the approach.
Talk a little bit about the spending you did support versus that you were more reluctant to support.
Yeah, I think the piece that I maybe last year we had to increase salaries for police and fire officers, not the line officers in the union, but the management level officers.
I remember some of this. Yeah.
Because they'd been left behind. We collectively bargain with the rank and file, and their salaries go up at a steady pace. But to save money for a number of years, we left behind the officers. So we got to the point where people were having to take cuts in pay to get a promotion because that position was at a lower rate. And that was an instance where I thought that it didn't make any sense. It was a bad model. And that even though it was pretty expensive to fix, I thought the right thing to do was fix it.
Now, give me an example of one that you thought, no, we don't need to spend money on that, or you didn't really see the arguments for it.
Most of it, I mean, a lot of the issues are when we pass the budget, and, you know, we'll... I've voted against every school budget.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
You're an automatic no.
Yeah, it came close this year, but I figured I'd just preserve my perfect record. And that's just an area where I believe that, we don't get involved that much in the details of the school district, whether that's right or wrong. But for the amount of money we spend, I always thought that, you know, we should be seeking. I'm a huge proponent of education. I think we, as a nation, lack woefully behind the rest of the world in what our public education system is. So I'm a strong advocate for fixing public education, and I just use my vote against the budgets as a way of making a statement. I make the same speech every year about a revolution in public education, and people kind of chuckle because they know I'm going to do that, and then I vote no against the budget. But
you really vote no just to give yourself the chance to give your position on, so you get a little platform to make your speech, basically. I mean, you're not really against the budget.
Yeah, I'm not really. I mean, the truth of the matter is, it's a symbolic vote for me because I know the budget's going to pass. If it came down to it looked like I was going to be the deciding vote on whether the budget passed or not, I would have to think about it a lot more seriously.
Right.
So
right.
It's just my way of trying to encourage the discussion about what we're doing in public education and not a statement that we spend too much on it.
Uh-huh. Right. Or that we should have vouchers so people can spend their personal money wherever they want. It sounded to me when we talked about this earlier that you were really coming at it from a parent who has had kids in school and wondered why things were the way they were, or is it the test results you're looking at and thinking?
It's sort of the whole thing. I mean, I just think my children were exactly like their father in the sense that we were terrible students. We all went through
and
public
look at
schools.
You're an adult.
You can
with
recover,
a job.
But made it okay. But we all had the same thing. And I think a lot of it is because the schools aren't rigorous enough. I believe we don't challenge kids enough, and I think we have a system. I just recently saw an article about foreign students coming here as exchange students, and their perception of American schools were that we focus so much on sports, and the academics is very easy. And I think that's true. And I think the future is going to be won by those people who master the digital age, and it's not necessarily going to be Americans if we don't really push sciences and math in schools and make our programs much more rigorous. At least that's I don't
that's
have the I don't have the credentials to lay out exactly what that looks like, but I believe that's the direction we should be looking.
Yeah. You know, when I think back, and I didn't read every story about you that came out in your 3 years, but you took a lot of initiatives, I thought. You know, the equal treatment ordinance, especially given Anchorage's history with that, which it was so volatile. And so, but I think you did a good job of explaining that. You had a kind of naive approach. Ah, now Bill's here. He can he can take the best of both. And in the end, everybody was mad at you for a while, but you worked through it. It was probably a good training. But then the sales tax, you were a proponent of a 4% sales tax. It didn't really go very far. I mentioned to you, well, why don't you talk a little bit about the sales tax? Like, knowing you weren't going to run again, did that make it easier to go ahead and propose something like that?
Not really. I mean, I didn't get a lot of flack for the sales tax, I don't think.
There were a lot of people. Quick. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was working on it for over a year. I mean, it was probably the thing I worked the most on during my time on the assembly, just because it was such a thick, complex document. Yeah, the discussion of it was pretty superficial. But
that's what I'm referring to. The only part that I saw.
It kind of came in the air got kind of sucked out of the sort of the discussion. The mayor came up with sort of an alternative that he's still thinking of rolling out at some point, and I think that kind of took away interest in my ordinance. But it was I think people in Anchorage have been talking about property tax relief for a long time. And you just have to understand that you can do that, but you're going to have to find some way to pay for the services that you're going to want. And I thought the sales tax was a good approach to that. I was willing to let it go to the voters and let them decide if that's what they wanted.
Right.
I personally doubt they would have passed it yesterday if it was on the ballot. But I think they deserve the chance to have that say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see. What other things did you champion, whether or not you succeeded?
Probably. I mean, the tax cap thing, I think I was sort of a proponent of preserving the tax cap the way it was. We had a big kind of blow up about that a couple years ago. And
We preserve it?
We did. We the assembly changed the tax cap, how it's calculated. And then it went, and I fought that battle at the assembly and lost. But then they took my language and made that the proposition that went on the ballot for people. So we basically ensconced the tax cap into the charter so that supposedly forevermore it should be locked in. So there was that. The whole the taxi cab, I get a lot of attention for that.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Both the
Did you get any calls this morning?
Not this morning, no. A couple of people mentioned to me that...
I bet you can't call a cab in this town, can you?
I try to avoid that, yeah. I'm not... And I really, I have a lot of respect. I was on the Transportation Commission. I know most of the people that are involved in that industry, and I have tremendous respect for them. They think I'm out to ruin their lives, and I'm not. I believe that the changes we're making will make the taxi industry better and more vibrant in the future. But I recognize that they don't necessarily share that opinion. And in the short run, there are some of them that, will probably experience some hardships because of what we've done.
Sort of the loss of the value of their permit.
Certainly the loss of the value of the permit for the permit holders is a big issue, especially the ones, I think the ones that bought them a long time ago have gotten their value out of them and the money they've earned. But the ones I have most sympathy with are the ones that have bought them most recently. I think those people...
had time to earn back.
I think, and they still will, and their permits are still good, and they can still make money, in the industry. But having that as a commodity, they certainly...
That they always thought they could sell for $100,000 or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and so I think they have a right to be upset and feel they're getting screwed.
What if I know I read one article that talked about the community is getting smaller. Maybe we should be taking some of these away instead of adding. That was one argument. Another one said that the bar break and the Eagle River can't get a cab, weren't real. And I read the resolution and they're right up there in there, So was this mostly a view that you have that, that we have to face the future and accept it and new ideas come in and we have to let them come in versus kind of protection? What did you bring to this decision?
Well, yeah, it's kind of both of those. I mean, I think the decision, I have no idea how many taxi cabs we need in Anchorage, and I don't think anybody else does either. I think we should let that decision be made by the market, by individuals who are either willing to put up the money to get a permit, to outfit a cab, to pay a dispatch company, to get into the business because they think there's money to be made in it, just like we do for anybody who wants to open a coffee stand. We don't regulate how many are. If they think they can make a go of it, they can get a permit and take their chance. And I think that has to be the operating model we work on for taxis. And then hopefully, if you believe in economics at all, the market will eventually sort that out and you'll get the right amount of cabs that the market can bear. And on the TNC side, the Uber issue, I do think that it's important for Anchorage to be looking forward to a different economy that is based more on sort of the digital age that we're living in and the ubiquity of cell phones and things like that. And I think it's important for Anchorage and Alaska, but most particularly Anchorage, to be viewed as a very tech-friendly city. I think we have the ability to stand to benefit from the new economy that I think is coming to the world if we are open to it. And those people looking to invest in those type of businesses look for places like Anchorage that are just naturally beautiful places to live.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do those kind of businesses anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important for us to look like we are, on the cutting edge of innovation. We're not. I mean, just being the last state in the country to come to have TNCs doesn't put us on the cutting edge, but at least it's a start in the right direction.
And just for people, the TNC, I know I looked it up. No.
Transportation Network Companies.
That's
the industry term for your Uber, Lyft, sidecar.
What about the other argument about, being independent contractors? I've heard both sides, a young mother saying, this is perfect. I can decide when I want to work on all that versus no health care, and you're a labor lawyer, so you know those issues. What do you think about those two arguments?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously in favor of the independent contractor concept. I think that is the magic which makes the TNCs, the Ubers type of places work, because people can just kind of, they don't have to make it a business. They don't have to buy a taxi cab. They can use their own vehicle. You're using a lot of capital, people's own personal cars that's already exists in the economy in new and creative ways. And I think it's legally proper. I mean, just as a labor lawyer, I think they are independent contractors because they choose the work when they want. They don't even have to show up to work if they never want to go out and turn on the app. So I understand that, unions and stuff want to protect them as employees and make sure they don't get abused, and that is important, but I don't think the way to do that is treating them as employees and not recognizing their independent contractor nature, because mm-hmm. I think that kills the best things about that model.
Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of testimony, and you heard a lot of people trying to protect those, didn't hear anything that made you think that was the way to go.
Yeah, it's like, public testimony. For the most part, it's, I think, rare for public testimony to change anybody's opinion. It does. I mean, I purposely try to keep an open mind going into public testimony because now and then you'll hear things that you hadn't thought of. They may not actually change your position on something, but they do make you think. But for the most part, public testimony, especially on those issues where we get lots of public testimony, are just repetitive. It's the same, different people coming up and saying the same thing over
your
and again.
Your chance, 2 minutes at the
mic.
Yeah,
and uh-huh. It's not, I don't count the number of people that come up and say, okay, we had 50 people for
that
this means, and 20 against it, uh-huh. therefore I've got uh-huh. to go that way. But the public testimony didn't sway me on any of those issues.
Yeah. I'm going to throw out our numbers one more time because we have about 10 minutes left. 550-8433 in Anchorage if you're dying to ask Bill Evans a question before he gets off the assembly. Or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I was just thinking about all the testimony that you listened to, and maybe you have some advice for people to get effective testimony. Or is there some way that testimony could help the assembly?
I think there is. And in fact, one of the things I wanted to do and didn't get done was to kind of revamp how we do public testimony. I there's a tendency on some issues for people almost to use public testimony as a filibuster. They'll flood the assembly chambers and do those things. And I don't think it's that helpful. Sometimes it can get things delayed and, you know, it could put pressure on certain assembly members. But I think it'd be much better to have a system where we have a certain number of sign-ups for testimony, because people can also reach out to us. I think, you know, actually emails are probably almost more effective in reaching your assembly member than the public testimony.
And did you get a lot of email?
Yeah, on most issues, we'd get, you know, every day we'd get emails on issues, and, mm-hmm. you know, certain issues get more email than others. And some of them are not that useful, but a lot of them are pretty well thought out and reasoned, mm-hmm. and, you know, because it takes a little more time to read it, I think it's a little more effective. So public testimony is not the only way to get your voice heard, and I would encourage anybody to use emails, because you can also use emails at any time. Public testimony is limited to that one night, but you know, as soon as an issue arises, if you get your email in, I can guarantee you the assembly members are paying attention to those.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. How about community councils? We do have the Federation of Community Councils. Did you end up getting a lot of input from your community council?
An assembly area takes in a number of community council areas.
Okay, more than one.
Oh, yeah. Actually, there's like 10 in District 6.
Oh, wow.
And that's one thing, whoever replaces me, it looks like Suzanne on the assembly, will undoubtedly do a better job than I did. One of my weak points was tying in with the community councils. I wasn't a person that came up through the community council ranks. I was never very comfortable going to the community councils.
Why?
Initially when I ran, everybody was saying, I got to go to the community councils now. And I felt like a hypocrite because I was like, I never went to them before. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm looking for your vote, I want to go out there and make it look like I care. The people in the community council were great, because once I did win the election and had to go as a part of the duties, I met a lot of great people, and I think they do an amazing job of, you know, being a volunteer grassroots kind of governmental entity. Mm-hmm. But it was never my favorite part of the job, because it's at night. All the meetings are at night. You know, I work during the day. I'm, by 7 o'clock at night, I'm, you know,
you're toast.
I'm not that good anymore. And I never really enjoy that. And I suspect Suzanne will be much better at that than I was.
Well, I guess the community councils can hope, right?
Yes, they can, I'm sure.
Let's see. You did tell me when we were talking that it was like 30 hours a week of additional. You've talked a lot about mm-hmm. the homework. I kind of wonder, like, you get up at 4 a.m. to read all this stuff, or you said you're kind of done at 7. So how did you squeeze it all in?
You have to. You're busy. It depends on, you know, what your my job is a pretty busy job, so I have a lot of hours. So, yeah, I do have to be, you know, I work weekends. Every weekend.
For your job?
For my job or the assembly. It's all kind of blurs together as one big job, really. But yeah, you have to put in the hours. I figure about 30 hours a week, because not only if you're drafting, you know, if I'm working on a sales tax bill, I'm drafting legislation, doing those things, going to committee meetings, work sessions, the actual assembly meetings, community council meetings, constituent problems with, you know, potholes, things like that. So it all adds up.
Right. Do you, you don't have any help, right? I mean, assembly members don't have
they do.
A phone answerer or anything.
Actually, you can have an assembly aide. There's money in the budget for each assembly person to have an aide. And I had an aide for a long time. The hardest part was figuring out what to do with them. I'd never, you know, I had a great aide, mm-hmm. And I just could never figure out how to
integrate
her.
Was it a full-time job?
No, it's generally a part-time job. And the amount, the assembly has a certain budget that each member has, they can spend on an aide, and they can spend the whole thing or part of it. And
uh-huh.
I'd say at least half, if not two-thirds, of the assembly members have aides.
Huh. That's interesting. I never really heard about that. And there is a small stipend, right? I don't even know what it is. I'm sure it's on the city's website. I didn't look it up.
Something less than minimum wage for the assembly. I think it's $20,000-some a year, which is given all the work, it's not. I don't think anybody's in it for the money.
Right. I doubt it. Here's a question: how did the experience change you? Do you think it changed you? I mean, it does sound like you sort of came in thinking, I can really have an impact, and then you got involved and learned a lot. So how did it change you?
It did, probably ways I don't even recognize yet. I think it made me more tolerant. I think it made me more nonpartisan. To be honest with you, I kind of ran in a more partisan way because that was how I understood politics at the time.
And you were thinking about what, taxes or what?
Yeah, taxes and government size. You know, I kind of believe in sort of a limited government, and I came from that sort of school of thought. And so I figured politics, the only politics you get to see are partisan politics. And so I kind of approached it from that. But you know, the 3 years on there made me realize that it's not politics as much as just getting smart people to do hard work and do it with kind of a reasoned approach is what I want out of public officials at every level. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully I'm a little more like that than I was when I started.
That's an interesting idea. I mean, actually getting into the seat and into the job and then seeing what it takes to run the city. I mean, do you still have a sense that the city should be – you didn't vote on the last budget for the city, right?
I thought. Yeah.
And what are your thoughts there? I mean, are you still a proponent of small government? And
I'm a proponent in having only as much government as you really need. And that requires a lot of difficult decisions. I have again, back to science, I have this Newtonian principle. I call it the power of constraint. I believe because government can expand sort of at will by just passing laws to increase taxes, it tends to be flabby in its intellectual pursuit of ideas. Mm-hmm. So I believe the things like the tax cap are actually a benefit mm-hmm. to the community because they force politicians to really have to look hard and make tough choices. And I think when we do that, we make better choices and we come up with ideas that we may not have thought of if we could have just simply raised taxes to cover the difference. Mm-hmm. My fiscal approach is the power of constraint, and I tried to apply that. Mm-hmm. Wherever I could.
Right. But I mean, it's even coming from a particular political arena, you're still, I mean, I don't think most people would have pursued, say, the Equal Rights Amendment. Or just hearing you talk about public education and the way you feel strongly about it. So, you know, you just can't paint with a broad brushstroke, I guess. I mean, and to some degree, you learn that by sitting in the seat at the assembly.
Yeah, it was an interesting way to learn life's lessons, but it is also a good venue for doing that. I think I think for all the four new people getting on, I mean, I look forward to that opportunity to
have your eyes opened.
Yeah, to learn don't think you know it all, like Patrick was saying. You actually can learn a lot more than you can teach on the assembly.
Right. Let's see. We have about a minute left. I guess we're not going to hear from Elvie. She probably got busy, something like that.
She's always standing me up with something.
She stood us up. Are you going to run again for something else?
I don't know. I may or may not. I have no plans to do so. I would be perfectly fine if I never did so. But if mm-hmm. the right opportunity presents itself and I think I could do a good job, I'd consider it.
Okay. Well, I have to say thank you so much for coming on. And that's Bill Evans, soon to be out of a job at the Assembly. And I'd like to thank Patrick Flynn, who also called in, who was a 3-term Assembly member, but he's now off the Assembly as well. Charles Wolforth will be back as your host on next week's Hometown Alaska, and his guests will be Malcolm and Cindy Roberts. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron was our audio engineer today. Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.